It's 7:33 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Dave Mistich, in for Beth Voorhees. The governor, the legislature, even a special commission on highways are all looking for ways to fund state roads. A select committee on infrastructure is trying to find ways to save money and increase efficiencies by combining the division of highways and the governing authority of the state's turnpike. But as Ashton Marter reports, simply combining the two would create serious legal implications for the state.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 55 requested a study to consolidate the operations and maintenance responsibilities of the State Parkways Authority and the Division of Highways in the hopes of saving money by finding efficiencies. The Parkways Authority is currently a separate entity responsible only for the 88 miles of turnpike through southern West Virginia. In 2019, when the bond debt on the road is paid off, state law dictates the Commissioner of Highways will decide if the condition of the roadways is good enough for the state to assume control, free of tolls. But state lawmakers want to know, could we save money if we just did that now? The answer, in short, is no. But of course, it's not that simple.
That would be a problem. That would violate the impairment of contract clause of the Constitution.
Greg Barr is the general manager of the Parkways Authority. He says should the state choose to consolidate them under the DOH before 2019, it would violate the bond contract.
When the contract was entered into to sell the bonds by the Parkways Authority, there was representations made to the bondholders that the Parkways Authority would be an independent agency that would oversee the maintenance and upkeep of the Parkways Authority. And take care of their responsibilities for the bondholders.
But that's only the first of many problems. Senator Bill Cole of Mercer County suggests integrating the agency into the DOH, but keeping the Parkways Authority name and governing board to align with the contract. The debt left on the bond then becomes the state's.
I would think that if I held that bond, that the state of West Virginia might be a little bit more substantive than an authority within the state of West Virginia. I mean, is that really a technicality that we're talking about that isn't a big deal, pay a couple hundred dollars to change a name and get some approval, or is that truly...
In this case, it would be a big deal.
Brian Helmick serves as bond counsel for Parkways. He says it is unconstitutional for the state to incur any debt.
There's a constitutional provision that doesn't allow the state to incur debt without a vote of the people. And when we say a vote of the people, we actually ask the people of West Virginia to vote to adopt an amendment to the Constitution allowing for certain debt to be incurred. That has been done a few times over the years, primarily for DOH highway projects.
Possible, but again, not simple. So just pay it off early. Pay off the debt and assume control of the roadway. That's what Delegate Nancy Guthrie of Kanawha County asked of Helmick. How much would it take to pay it off now? Helmick says there is about $55 million in principal left on the bond, but you can't just pay it off when you have the funds. The state would incur prepayment penalties to the tune of $7.5 million. For now, it appears the Parkways Authority is contractually obligated to not just remain intact, but remain in control of the maintenance and collection of tolls on the turnpike. But of course, in 2019, all of that could change. The state could decide to rebond the road, keep the tolls, and use the money to fund other road projects, or at least a dozen other scenarios, all being considered by the governor, the legislature, and the Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:37. Your forecast for today, mid-morning showers with highs in the 40s and 50s. For tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. Freeze watch remaining in effect from late tonight to early tomorrow, with temperatures falling to freezing or below freezing. And for Thursday, mostly cloudy with highs in the 40s. Overnight, with lows in the 20s and 30s.
Support for West Virginia Morning provided by the West Virginia Hospital Association. The new health insurance marketplace provides a variety of choices. Coverage options and enrollment information are available at healthcare.gov or 1-800-318-2596.
The Horizontal Well Control Act of 2011 required studies be conducted to gain a more profound understanding of all that's entailed in the natural gas drilling that's sweeping northern West Virginia. Those reports are coming due, and legislators are hearing from scientists who have been looking into the matter. Glynis Board reports.
Two major reports are being discussed in Charleston this week. One looks at air and noise pollution, while another considers water use related to horizontal well drilling. Michael McCauley is the interim chairman of the Department of Occupational and Environmental Health from the School of Public Health at West Virginia University. He presented recommendations based on the air, noise, and light study he published earlier this summer. McCauley says the major surprise his study revealed were copious amounts of benzene detected by his air monitors. The monitors were set up at the current legal setback distance of 625 feet from the center of the drilling pads. His report notes that at one site, benzene levels were detected of up to 85 parts per billion. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health recommends workers regularly exposed to 100 parts per billion wear respiratory protection. So why worry about benzene? Well, substantial quantities of epidemiologic, clinical, and laboratory data link benzene to aplastic anemia, acute leukemia, and bone marrow abnormalities.
Now, we suspect that benzene may be coming, in fact, from diesel engines because a lot of fracking sites have truck traffic going in and out of them. And also during the actual hydraulic fracturing itself, there are a number of diesel engines that are sitting on the pad being run at high rates.
Based on his findings, McCauley made suggestions to lawmakers. McCauley says the current required setback distance is a regulation that should be abandoned. The aim of the rule is to protect people in the vicinity from exposure, but he says an arbitrary number won't achieve that given the variability of topography and considering that pollution doesn't always come from the center of the pad. A better idea? Control the emissions. To that end, McCauley submits that monitoring real-time emissions is likely the smartest, most effective tool to employ, especially around sensitive areas like houses, hospitals, and schools. Monitoring would allow high levels of pollutants to be addressed immediately by the people controlling the operation. And his recommendation for noise pollution? Control the noise. That's the sound of a horizontal drilling pad in Marshall County. That's about half a mile away.
We were seeing short-term exposures exceeding 100 decibels around some of these sites. 100 decibels is kind of the level of a rock band. So you don't want a rock band outside your bedroom window. Although the long-term exposures were below 70 decibels on average for the sampling period that we saw, there were still levels that exceeded 70 decibels for brief periods of time. But those brief periods of time can be a concern, particularly if they're disturbing sleep or if they're really loud.
An expert in public health, McCauley explains that 55 decibels is enough to interrupt sleep, which in turn could result in hypertension or high blood pressure, already endemic in the state, especially in the northern panhandle. He says noise pollution needs to be taken into account when constructing these sites and also when considering the traffic patterns to and from them. So switching gears here, water use is another area of concern for legislators. Evan Hansen, president of Downstream Strategies, conducted a study on water use in hydraulic fracturing operations in and around the state. He and his colleagues set out to analyze water use data provided by natural gas drillers to the Department of Environmental Protection, data they're required to provide as per the 2011 law. Hansen says, according to the data, the average Marcellus well in West Virginia injects about 5 million gallons of water into the wells as fracking fluid. 8% of that comes back up. He says the DEP and the industry should be applauded for adopting new recycling practices, as about 75% of that flowback is now being reused. He says the remainder is disposed of in deep well injections.
Even though about 3/4 of the flowback fluid is being reused and recycled, which is great, that's only substituting for about 10% of the water withdrawals. So while great progress has been made in increasing the amount of recycling, that's not taking care of the vast quantities of water that still need to be withdrawn from West Virginia streams.
Hansen adds that tracking this waste should continue to be a priority. West Virginia already sees 100 million gallons of wastewater each year. And in Pennsylvania, across the border where the industry is significantly more developed, they see nearly a billion gallons of waste each year. Hansen also sees several areas of improvement regarding data collection and reporting requirements. He says the quality of the data should be improved. He and his team found many mistakes and suggests the DEP take steps to improve industry reporting. He adds many operators also aren't submitting data within required timeframes. But Hansen says his biggest concern is that West Virginia law only requires operators to report flowback water. It's a different story in Pennsylvania, where flowback water only accounts for 38% of reported waste.
In West Virginia, because only flowback fluid is reported and the other types of waste are not reported, we still don't really have a handle on how much waste is being generated and where it's going. So we're still operating in some uncertainty about what's going on in the real world, and that's not a great place to be if you're trying to get the right policies in place to protect water resources.
Hansen says his report will be made available on October 30th. That day, he will also conduct an online webinar explaining his findings, and that webinar is open to the public. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
The Huntington YMCA is leading the charge in one area of the battle with obesity that's being ignored in the Huntington area, childhood obesity. Clark Davis has more on a new program members of the Huntington community can help children.
The Huntington YMCA, along with Cabell Huntington Hospital, St. Mary's Hospital, and Cabell County Schools, has developed a program called Kids in Motion. The new partnership will lead the brand new Kid Fit program that the YMCA and hospital officials hope is the next step in the fight against childhood obesity in the city. Caroline Woodward was one of a handful of kids on hand Tuesday to demonstrate the equipment. The six-year-old says she enjoys it all.
I actually like everything. So it's a lot. It's fun, and you can be healthy and be strong, and that's really it.
The program will allow students to exercise at the new YMCA building, which houses exercise equipment that fits the interests of children. What that means is, instead of just running on a treadmill or lifting weights like adults, the children play interactive games with lights and video screens while also constantly moving. Jamie Berry is the health and wellness director for the YMCA and the director of the Kids in Motion program. He says the program fills a void in the fight against obesity.
We are trying to fill that, and we are going to be partnering with Huntington's Kitchen and doing some educated classes there. We hope to involve the parents as much as possible. And with the nutrition education and Huntington's Kitchen, that's going to be, you know, that's really going to be where the family is oriented. But the space is definitely for the kids, and so this is going to fill that void.
Some of the activities the kids will use are things like iDance, which is similar to Dance Dance Revolution, and the T-Wall, where players try to quickly touch surfaces as they light up in various sequences. For each activity, the kids will compete with each other, as well as previous scores, in order to earn points. George Smells is the executive director of the Huntington YMCA.
What we're wanting to see is that children are becoming active. We're wanting to see the families learning nutritional concepts to use with their children and as they grow up, because it's this generation that's going to make a difference in the future.
They'll start with a pilot program that will run from November 4th to December 20th. They hope to get the kinks worked out so they can begin a 12-week program starting January 6th and running through the end of March. At the same time, they'll offer a family fit program like the Kid Fit program that will incorporate the parents. During the program, they'll keep track of the kids' weight, body mass index, and body fat percentage to measure progress so they know how much attention to give to a particular child. People like Benny Thomas from the Cabell County School Board say this is an important step for the community.
The better it catches on, if it grows, we can add to it as time goes on, involve more kids, and reduce that stigma of the obesity and that overweight population of younger people.
Participation isn't free, but they hope to soon offer scholarships for those that can't afford to pay YMCA fees. Participants in the program and their parents or guardians will receive important nutrition education through grocery store tours and classes at Huntington's Kitchen. Barry says their mission is one of vital importance.
Parents need to take advantage of it because schools can't offer this. Not every child is involved in sports. And so video games, kids want to love and play video games. We've got video games, but they've got to be moving in order to play those games.
The programs are for kids ages 5 to 14. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast while you're there. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Joni Deutsch. I'm Dave Mistich.